the evolution and devolution of the Roman army. Roman army is one of the most well-known of the military formations of the ancient world. And, of course, with all the stories of Hannibal and Julius Caesar and all of these characters, it's, and the magnificent movies. I mean, we've all seen at least one of the movies. I mean, if you've seen Gladiator, I love the battle scene in the Gladiator because that shows the Roman army at its absolute peak, the time of the good emperors and all of the firepower there. If you watch Spartacus, you see the classic Republic and end of the Republic formations and movement. If you're watching Antony, or I should say just Cleopatra, you see that other aspect of it. So if you go back in time, you can actually see how the Romans will gradually change. So when you first start out, the Romans are going to look very much like the Etruscans, and the Etruscans are very much patterned after what the ancient Greeks had. You're going to have various helmets. They're going to have more of an open face to them. Sometimes they'll have little slots on the side of the helmet where feathers or insignia can go in. They'll have leg protectors. They'll have greaves. They will use a long spear. They'll use a shorter sword. The Greeks use a much larger sword. The Roman gladius is much shorter. And they have a slightly curved rectangular sword, sometimes with a shield, with a boss in the middle of it, which in the early days of the Roman Empire, what it was it looked like almost like a propeller on the front of their shield. You'd have a round or a rectangular protrusion in the center of it, and then there'd be a little bar going up and a little bar going down. The Romans like to use that as a weapon, so they could bash you with it. It's also narrower than the rounded Greek shield that did cover the whole body, but it was from the neck down to below, near the ankles in some cases. So, and this is the type of equipment that they're going to use. Not going to be any really, there's a little mix of possible chainmail, but for the most part, it's going to be leather armor, some pieces of metal. You'll have some of the wealthier people will have probably a bronze cuirass on there. The organization is in groups of what's called the phalanx legion, which is about 3,000 infantry and about 3,000 cavalry. Usually runs about 500 men across and 6 men deep. So it functions very much like what the Greeks function. And this is the type of military setup that the Romans will use through the Punic Wars. Now, one of the defects with it is the cavalry. The Roman cavalry in this early period, which is really from about 750 BCE to the end of the Third Punic War, is for the most part just for scouting purposes. And they will find out in the Punic Wars against Hannibal that just being a cool individual, a member of the Equite class, and riding around on your horse is a disaster. It's not going to be just, oh, look, here they come, because Hannibal's going to turn his cavalry into a fighting force, which is why the Romans are at such a disadvantage during the Second Punic War. Finally, the Romans will get the hang of it, but to help defeat Hannibal, basically what they did at the Battle of Zama is they just figured out a way to get Hannibal's best cavalry, the Numidian cavalry, to switch sides and offer them an independence deal they couldn't turn down. Of course, the key to this army of this time period is you had to be a citizen landowner. So this made you very loyal to the state. The trouble is when the Punic War takes place, the Punic War causes so much devastation, a lot of people lost their land. And you need a much larger army because as the Romans defeated Carthage, they began gobbling up larger and larger amounts of territory, which brought them into rubbing next to other countries who were afraid of him, and that leads to the next fighting, the battle with Macedonia, the battle with Pontus and Mithridates and so forth and so on. So after the Punic War period, there is a reform in the Roman army, and it's referred to as the Marian military reform. One of the things that happens here is that the soldiers no longer have to own land. They do have to be citizens, but they do not have to own land. So, to some extent, this changes the loyalty of the soldier more to the general, who is the person who's going to give them their retirement, if you will, their land and booty. In addition, they're also going to get away from the using the phalanx into using what are called maniples, manipular legion, where you have smaller segments that then can be moved in and around. So a manipular legion still has about 3,000 heavy infantry, but it has about 1,200 light infantry along with cavalry. And this allows you to move them around and change formations. You can make them in the phalanxes if you want to, or you can move them away. A great example of this is the battle sequence, a final battle sequence in Spartacus, where Spartacus is sitting up on the hill, and the army of Crassus and Lucullus and Pompey are marching towards them, and you'll see them coming in legion by legion set up. Then they will stop, and then you'll see the men change positions and change their formations. This allowed the Romans, this manipular legion, allowed the Romans to pull off 400 men or 800 men and have them do something else, so you could target it that way. And as a matter of fact, the troops are referred to as Marius's mules. Now, the equipment is going to look pretty much the same. You're going to have the heavy spear, the pilum, but then they're going to make a little lighter spear. The idea of throwing the spear, the phalanx formation, you're fighting with the spear. In the later Roman units, the manipular legions and the cohortal legions, where we changed them from 400 to 500 men in a cohort, which is Julius Caesar's time period, they have another spear that when you throw it, it's a little lighter, but it has a weakened joint on the handle. So when it sticks in a person's spear, they can't pull it out and throw it back at you. It breaks off. And that leaves your opponent with the position of, okay, now do I carry this shield with these seven pieces of metal in it, or I discard them? And the idea was, if you didn't hit the enemy with your spear would weigh his shield down, and he'd eventually get rid of it, and make it easier for him to fight. You got the same thing with the pilum. It was a much heavier spear, but there was always the possibility of pulling that out and throwing it back at you. You'll also begin to see during the time of Marius and Sulla and early Julius Caesar, they're going to be in chainmail. They're going to have chainmail jacket coverings over their... it would be a tunic length, so it would come down to probably the mid-upper leg. And the sandals that they're using will have cleats in them, so you can actually get some traction on it. But the trouble here was a change in who these people were, supporting. You did not have to own land, so there's a little less discussion with this. It leads to more Civil War-like situations. And the bosque on the shields now is usually a rounded piece in the center of the shield that they will use, and they'll go to the gladius. You throw your spears, and then you pull your short sword out and move in and fight. And then from 100 BC until you get to Imperial Rome, then you have what's called the cohortal legion, which is where you have 6,000, anywhere from 4,000 to 6,000 heavy infantry, but they're broken up in groups of 500. And when you talk about commanders, the backbone of the Roman army is the centurion. The century is the smallest number of men. Although it's supposed to be 100, it's frequently 60 or in between. So the centurion is the guy in charge of 100 men. And then you have a tribune who's in charge of 1,000 men. So if you have a cohortal legion of 6,000 infantry, well, you would end up with 60 centurions and 6 tribunes, and then your commanders. It's a pretty small officer corps. And again, this just allows you to separate. Then when you get into the time of Augustus, this cohortal legion changes its look. The probably the biggest change that you see is the chainmail is gone. What replaces it is that what's called segmented lorica, which are these overlapping metal plates that cover the shoulders, very much like shoulder pads in football, and then cover the front and the back of the soldier. And it comes down to the waist, does not come down to mid-thigh. And we're still using the same spears. The helmets will change a little bit, get a little more facial coverage. The back of the helmet will flare back out to protect things from being thrown down on them if they're besieging towers and things like that. Still using the gladius. And that's what you're going to see in the gladiator movie there at the very end. And that goes on till about 250. And after that, the Roman army then begins to devolute. What happens is, as the Romans, when you get into 250, I mean, you have situations where the empire actually supposedly falls in 476, and long since collapsed before then. But there are several occasions where it nearly went early, and as a result of barbarian invasions, particularly after the time of Marcus Aurelius. And what became common is that you would have barbarians come in because you didn't have enough of your regular people. So what you begin to see is the barbarianization of the Roman army. That Roman army that we're used to looking at literally becomes like the personal bodyguard of the emperor, the Praetorian Guard, or the elite of the Roman army. And then the rest of the army are people that may have a barbarian-style shield. They may not have any armor on. They may or may not have a helmet. They may have a different type of spear. They're not going to be as well organized. We certainly will not have the esprit de corps or the discipline of the regular Roman army. And whether they are successful or not is more or less dependent upon their commander. Some of the commanders themselves are part barbarian, such as Aetius at the time of Attila the Hun. He was a part Hun himself. And so what we think of as the Roman army now becomes a very small part and a very elite part. Now the West half completely collapses. In the East, the army kind of rejuvenates under the Byzantines into more of a heavy cavalry, and what is called cataphract cavalry, and that is you're going to have the horses covered in chainmail. With helmets and things on their faces, on their heads, and so will the cavalrymen, and they'll be a group of shock troops that you use when you've got your enemy weakened, and that will last for 1,000 years after that. Till you get to about the time of the First Crusade, when one of the emperors prior to the First Crusade takes his army out and gets it massacred in a sandstorm, but it's a long, drawn-out process of watching the Roman army gradually get better and then gradually disintegrate. It would be like seeing the American army that we have as it modernizes and modernizes, and then suddenly we reach a point where, we're not using technology and we're mixing in single-shot repeating rifles with a bolt action, and now we're going to muzzle loaders, and pretty soon we're back throwing rocks at each other. There's a lot of books on Roman army. Two of them that are really good for the topic that I've chosen today is The Complete Roman Army by Goldsworthy, and then another one is called The Rise and Decline of the Late Roman Field Army by Cromwell. Most of the Roman books on the army like to focus on the time of the Republic and early Empire, and I've kind of given you a total overview. Something that when I teach my Roman history classes, I do a little section on the Roman army with little video clips so that I can deal with that at one time and then leave it and then just make references back to it. So thank you very much.